Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hello, everybody. I am Jeff Howe. I am not John Rook. I am from Nesson.com. And for those who don't know me, I've been covering the team as a beat writer since 2009 for Nesson.com. And I'll be filling in from 2 to 4 today and tomorrow. So,
has it been that long?
It has been that long. Imagine that. I've been down here since 2006, but I've been a beat writer since 2009. So,
what were you doing before then?
I was working at the Boston Metro. A little stuff with Chris Price, friend of yours.
Yeah, mine, friend of
ours. And everybody's.
Big friend.
Really, yeah. So yeah, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today, just a couple hours, and we'll hit on some things. Rob Gronkowski, I guess, had the news of the day to start things off. Came out and spoke about the one bit of news that I guess did come out of Patriots land over the weekend was the photos that popped up on Twitter of him and a certain adult film actress. And, clearly
keep
that
it cool back there, Matt.
Caused a little bit of a stir. Gronk came out, he was definitely apologetic about it. He didn't really want to spend too long on the topic, but he did want to say that he was sorry. He didn't come out and directly say he was sorry, but the things that he was saying...
No, but it had that tone to it, I thought.
Yeah,
you and I were both in that scrum with all of the reporters, and I felt like he generally was sorry for the uproar that was caused. I don't know if he's necessarily sorry for having met her.
No.
But he did seem genuinely sorry for, the stir that it caused. And it's one of those things where I don't think he really thought it through beforehand.
And that really, as he said, is part of the development of being a professional athlete. He's just 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly still needs to grow up as all rookies, second, third year players still need to do. He needs to learn the life of a professional athlete and realize that everything that he does is going to be in the public spotlight. And the photos didn't come from his Twitter account. They came
right
from hers. So
right,
just, hey, a lapse in judgment. It's not the worst thing in the world to be hanging out with a girl of that nature. I mean, really.
He's not the first athlete who's ever done something like that. Not the first, a high profile person in the entertainment industry who's done anything like that. It's just the way things are done around here. You don't typically see players getting into those kind of things or at least during the season anyway.
Right.
You know, the off season maybe is a little different, but especially, you know, coming out of a bye week, huge game against the Steelers coming up, pretty sure he had a good talking to from not only his captains and coaches, but he also acknowledged that he spoke with the owners.
Yeah, he did say he spoke with Robert Kraft, and I think the issue at hand here, really, and it's kind of funny, just to backtrack for a second, I think when I tweeted earlier that Rob was sincere about, or he apologized for the incident and all this other stuff, people were kind of angry, I guess, that he had to apologize for anything. And I can see that side of it, because in the grand scheme of things, it's not like he was out doing anything illegal or anything even crossing that line. But I think the issue at hand here is he had a jersey with the team logo on it, and everything
and
that represents,
name,
yeah,
right,
his name, everything that represents this organization, and it was in the hands or on the being worn by the adult film star there. So I think that's probably not the reputation that Robert Kraft wants his players to be going out and spreading around, and that's I think really, Rob Gronkowski said that he didn't want to hurt or harm the reputation
of anybody on the team, or
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and he mentioned Robert by name. It's just, yeah, and I think whoever asked the question about, you know, it being a learning process, I think that hit the nail on the head, because look, when you're that age, he's basically still a college kid.
Yeah.
You know, he, he's of that age. There are a lot of guys in college who are 24, 25 when they become rookies in this league.
Dany Watkins was a 27-year-old in the draft.
Yeah,
this
I mean,
year.
He was a little bit of an extreme, but there are guys who are like legitimately come out, you know, they spend 5 years in high school. Some of them, you know, do a prep year. Then they get redshirted in college. So they have an extra year there. So normally you're 22 when you graduate, you know, as an undergrad. Add another 2 years, you're 24. Some guys are even late when they start school as kids. You know, you start a year late based on whatever your, you know, your local school district's requirements are. You could be 25 years old, legitimately, having gone through the whole normal process and being a rookie in this league. And he and his fellow tight end Aaron Hernandez are barely old enough to drink legally. Yeah.
Hernandez turned 21, I think it was the Saturday before the Browns game.
Maybe I just drink
right.
to get drunk.
Right, yeah, in November. He's going to be 22 in the next few weeks, I think.
Exactly. He was the youngest player in the entire NFL last year.
Right, right. So, look, think back to when you were that age, which for you was only like 3 weeks ago.
Right.
No, but you do think sometimes that you don't think it through. And as a professional, that you tend to forget these guys have all of a sudden go from having virtually no money, because we know that guys at that level of play in college get paid one way or another.
Yeah.
But you're now getting huge six-figure salaries when you're a rookie. You get all this attention from people who you know, just a year ago, nobody knew who he was, really,
mm-hmm.
you know, except maybe on campus. Now people all over the world know who he is. They recognize his name. He hangs out with Tom Brady. He gets passes thrown by him. He gets all this attention. He has all this money. And he's still a kid. He's really not, you know, a mature adult yet. Even though he's 6'6", 265, whatever he is. I mean, he looks like a man, but he still has that child in him. He still has that, you know, that college mentality to him.
And when he came out after his junior year.
Exactly.
He didn't even play his junior year because of a back injury.
Exactly.
So that's time away from a team that he probably didn't get the type of PR, tutelage through his college life.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out a year early, that's one less year of the education that you're going to get. And like you said, he flew under the radar. That draft class, there were a lot of people who thought that Rob was probably the best tight end, or at least the most well-rounded tight end.
One of the top three, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
He was coming out of Arizona. Jermaine Gresham was the guy with all the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Hernandez was an award winner nationally.
Would have been a higher pick if it weren't for his immature troubles.
Exactly.
So, as well.
Anyway, I think we're probably getting a little too deep and not bashing them, but talking about their age and the immaturity. The grand scheme of things, it's not like Rob really did anything that was a bad thing at all.
No, but I think what people are surprised by is that, like I said earlier, it's the way business is done around this team in particular.
Yep.
You know, if this were, you know, any other team, it probably wouldn't be as big a deal, because they're for some reason, the standards are a little bit different here. When it comes to on and off the field behavior, there's way more attention paid to what you do, how you represent yourself. I mean, that's not to say it's not important at other teams, but I mean, look, how many times did he say, "I'm all about the Steelers. I'm here to talk about the Steelers."
Right.
I mean, there's a script that we can write it every week. What the players are going to say,
mm-hmm.
what the head coach is going to say behind
Everybody
the mic.
Everybody, just do your job.
Yeah, that's part of it too. Right. Thanks, Bill, for chiming in. You've got practice to take care of. You don't need to be yelling at us. But I think that's more what people were shocked by, was that it was a player on this team that got caught up in that.
Yeah.
During the season. Again, you know, in the off season we had Brett Lockett and Kim Kardashian's little ridiculous thing.
Heard a thing or two about that.
Right. But again, that was during the off season and even
during
a lockout.
Yeah.
Too. So players were even a little bit more on a longer leash at that point. This is during the season. I know it was during their time off,
right.
But he is still essentially a rookie for all intents and purposes. I mean, like you said, coming out a year early and having just one full year under his belt, it's I still kind of think of him and Hernandez as rookie types. Even though they're technically in their second year,
right.
they know the drill is, they're allowed to speak a lot more often than they were last year. There's still growth there that needs to happen, physically, emotionally, maturity-wise, everything. There's you know, I just have, I don't blame him at all for really anything he did, like you said, because from what we know, nothing illegal happened.
Right.
A little embarrassing? Absolutely.
Right.
Should he have thought it through a little bit more? Probably.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
You know what I liked, though, was the fact that he came out, and there was media access Tuesday, so the second day of media access, since it happened, he addressed it and he put it to rest.
That's how you should take care of it.
Exactly. He admitted what happened. He tried to skirt around it for a second, but then he was like, you know what, I should probably come out and get this out of the way. And that's how you want to see somebody who knows that they made a mistake, even if it wasn't a huge thing, knows he made a mistake, and whether it was a maturity issue or whatnot, he came out, he addressed it, he's moving on, he wants to talk about the Steelers, he got rid of it, it was the busiest media day that there will be all week because it's Wednesday and Brady speaks, so there were as many eyes and ears on him today as there would be at any other point in this week, and now he can get back to business.
And, you know, that's a good point, Jeff, because I think that in itself shows a little bit of growth and maturity in that he didn't try to hide from it.
Right.
He didn't wait until the slowest day of the week to speak. He came right out. He knew he had something to do, and he addressed it like a man. And I think that is a good sign. If you're a fan of this team and you follow Rob and want to see him do well, that's how it should be. That's how it should be handled.
And then you can even take it another step and say, last year they had Algie Crumpler, who was, in my short time covering this team,
half a coach.
Exactly.
Basically.
One of the greatest veteran presences as a leader that I've seen come through this locker room. Mm-hmm. He's been long gone now, and Rob still came out and did his thing. He didn't need a guy like Algie. I mean, I'm sure somebody took him behind the scenes and said, hey, smarten up. But he had that. That's sort of taking a leadership role upon yourself with that tight end group.
Do you think Big Brother Gronkowski had any say in talking to Little Brother?
I'm sure there was a conversation. There might have been a high five.
Yeah, I wonder about. I'm sure there was a conversation. I just wonder what direction the conversation went in. You know, was it reprimanding or was it encouraging?
I would love to have been a fly on the wall for the first 15 minutes of that conversation, but I bet the 16th minute said, "Hey, you should probably come out and say you messed up."
Yeah. But you know, the bigger point now is, how does this affect him and the team the rest of this week?
Not at all.
Especially when you look back at last year at Pittsburgh, his breakout game as a pro.
5 for 72 and 3 touchdowns.
Exactly. And the Steelers had no way of guarding this kid.
Right.
At all day long. And he carved them up. I think by addressing this now, he first of all gets that out of the way, doesn't make it a distraction for anybody else the rest of the week. But my bigger question is now, how is he going to perform on Sunday? Is he going to be as effective as he was last year? I have a hard time believing that the Steelers and Dick LeBeau are going to let him do to them again what he did last year, which raises the point, how then is New England going to counter that?
I think him and Aaron Hernandez are so superior as football players right now than they were at any point last year, whether it was week 2 or that loss against the Jets. They are so relied upon in Tom Brady's offense to do the right things consistently. It's not about Gronkowski being too big for a defensive back to cover and too fast for a linebacker to cover. And it's not about Aaron Hernandez being too quick for really anybody to cover, and them using their sheer physicality and physical attributes to just be better football players than the guys who are lining up on the other side of them. They're able to think the game better now than they were last year. And you could see plenty of points at last season, very notably, especially in the Jets' loss in the playoffs, where Tom Brady was agitated and that those two guys were not where they were supposed to be on the field. Brady threw points like that last year, could only rely on Wes Welker and Deion Branch. Now he has the two tight ends, Welker and Branch, to throw the ball to. And so if the Steelers want to take away Rob Gronkowski, the Patriots will be fine with that. They'll use him as a sixth offensive lineman, and they'll use Aaron Hernandez, Wes Welker, and Deion Branch to spread everything out. Potentially Kevin Falk comes back. Danny Woodhead, much better now with the ankle. especially after the bye week. And Ben Jarvis Green Ellis has picked up his performance, especially when it comes to blitz pickup and being a better, more serviceable weapon out of the backfield. So the Patriots, the weapons are much more mature right now than they were last year, and that's why they're much more well-balanced than they were a year ago. So, like I said, to get back to my initial point, if the Steelers want to get rid of Rob Gronkowski, the Patriots will be fine with that. They'll go to three, four, five other guys.
And before we go any further, just want to invite everybody else to take part if they so choose. Webradio@patriots.com is our email address. The Ace Ticket Hotline is 508-298-0398 if you want to talk about this game or about anything else, really, because Jeff and I can talk about anything and everything and usually do when we're at practice or everywhere else. So join us that way, either of those two ways. Your point about taking away Gronkowski and Hernandez, I'm looking at Hernandez's numbers from last year's game at Pittsburgh. You ready for this, Jeff?
I am ready.
Zero catches, 0 yards for a zero average. He did nothing against Pittsburgh last year. Something tells me that's not going to be the case this year.
Can you have an average when there's nothing to
Well, you know, I was just hammering the point home. But, it was the Rob Gronkowski show all around last year.
It was.
And Hernandez, who was active for the game, because he did miss some time last year, but he was active for that game, wasn't a factor, really, in the offense. And I think the week before at Cleveland, he had 5 for 48 and 2 touchdowns.
Right.
The next week, they just did the opposite, and they went to Gronkowski. Hernandez wasn't really the factor, but the talk all that week was about Hernandez coming off the 2-touchdown game at Cleveland, horrible game that it was. I don't see him getting shut out this year by the Steelers.
You can't shut out either one of those guys. They're just...
If you take one away, the other one's going to be open.
Right, and they're different players, too, but they complement each other so well. I mean, Gronkowski is an elite tight end in both aspects, catching and blocking, and he could do either one. If he went to an offense, if he played for the Chargers and took on Antonio Gates' role, I think he could have 80 to 90 catches this year, and I don't really think that's an exaggeration. I mean, you can't take Aaron Hernandez and make him do what Rob Gronkowski does because he's just not as physical of a blocker. It's not like he's bad, but Gronkowski is among the elite. He is with a Jason Witten in that category, in my opinion.
They're the exact same size, and Witten. 6'6", 265. Hernandez, barely 6'1", 6'2", at the very most.
And a lot skinnier.
A lot thinner, a lot lighter. He's a different type of player. He's more of a wide receiver or even an H-back type. He can block. If you need him to, like in certain situations, he can chip, a defensive end or an outside linebacker helping out a tackle. He can go and line up in the backfield and be sort of a lead blocker or even, you know, running wheel routes out of there. But he's just a different type of player than Gronkowski,
right,
which makes it even more difficult, I think, for defenses to try to, because if you're trying to take away, teams traditionally have two of the same type of tight ends on the field.
Mm-hmm.
You can maybe try to scheme your defense to neutralize what they're doing because they're doing the same thing. They're asked to do the same thing when they go out on the field, generally.
Right.
These guys are asked to do different things
mm-hmm.
when they're out on the field and can do different things. But in some ways are very much equal because how often do you see a guy 6'6", 265 who can run a seam route the way Gronkowski does?
Right.
I mean, that's scary. Witten, Gates, there are very few of them who can really do it effectively. And Hernandez has the speed of a wide receiver and throw a cornerback on him. That's a mismatch.
Yeah.
Throw a linebacker on him. He'll outrun him. That's a mismatch.
And what are you can't put your top cornerback on a guy like Aaron Hernandez.
Well, if you do, then Wes Welker's going to kill you.
Not only that, but the Patriots win that battle. Just if you want to take him away with your top cornerback, exactly, like you said, Wes Welker, Deion Branch, somebody will take advantage of the second or third cornerback. So that's like an instant victory for the Patriots if something like that happens. So that leaves, your nickelback? I mean, how good are a lot of nickelbacks in this league? Not very.
Well, we're at the point now where nickelbacks are essentially the 12th starter
yeah.
on a defense. So you have, I like to think, three corners who are starter worthy, but they're different types of players. You know, not every slot corner can play on the outside. Not every outside corner can play the slot.
Yeah.
You know, I look at Darrell Revis. He's a great outside corner, but I don't know if he's as capable a slot corner if you put him in there. I mean, maybe he is because he's such a great athlete, but guys in his caliber, I don't think everyone can do that.
Well, he was in the slot against Brandon Marshall on that 100-yard pick, wasn't he? And I'm not using that as a benchmark for how well he plays in the slot. I just think that that play has kind of taken on a life of its own.
It has. I still think Brandon Marshall tripped into him.
He did.
I don't think Revis committed any sort of foul on the play, which I know a lot of people were, oh, he had his hands all over him. Well, if the receiver didn't fall into him, he wouldn't have had his hands all over him.
There was some contact, and I think Brandon Marshall was expecting more contact, and Revis kind of allayed him a little bit and then just lost his balance.
Because he was looking for the ball, too.
Yeah, and then as soon as he started to trip, that's when Marshall started pushing Revis a little more.
Yeah.
And then it just went downhill for the Dolphins there. Revis, while we're on the topic, gets away with as much downfield contact as any cornerback in the league. I mean, it's amazing. He gets away with the amount of contact that the Patriots cornerbacks used to use against the Colts when they were winning Super Bowls. And there is a different set of rules for Darrell Revis down the field as there are for other cornerbacks. I mean,
that's being a jackass.
The amount of contact the amount of contact that he got away with down the field in that Chargers game was amazing. And then they hit Eric Weddle for that pass interference call on the Jets' key drive there.
There were some... you watch that whole game?
A large majority of it.
Me too. There were some just ticky-tack calls being made in that game. I mean, what is the NFL becoming with these absurd calls? So many pass interference calls. Quentin Jammer got called for a couple of pass interferences. I was apoplectic. Not that I'm a Charger fan or anything of that nature, but I like to watch good football.
Right.
And I like players to be allowed to play football. The refs weren't allowing them to play football.
Right.
He went in and deflected a pass perfectly. You couldn't have done it any better along the sideline. I can't remember if it was against Holmes or Burris. I don't remember who the receiver was, but he made a perfect defense along the sideline, and he did one of these, like, you know, like, exulting celebrations on the sideline afterwards, and because he didn't see right behind him, the ref had thrown a flag.
Right. I do remember that play now.
They showed the replay. He had perfect coverage, didn't touch the receiver at all, and they call pass interference. Yeah. I mean, and the rules with the quarterbacks, it's just, I know we're spiraling on a tangent here, but the refereeing, I think, especially this year, has been, it's been a joke. It's not the NFL that I remember. There's way too much emphasis on being precise with every single, like, every call is black and white. There's no gray area. The refs aren't allowed to have any sort of judgment exercised in their calls.
And the problem is there has become this gray area because the players don't know what's being called anymore. There are a lot of inconsistencies with a lot of these personal foul calls, mainly against the quarterback, but the defenseless receiver thing has gotten completely out of hand. The refs have no idea who a defenseless receiver is at this point in the season. And if they're gonna tighten up these rules and throw the flags and fine the guys and all that other stuff, I'm fine with that because I understand the end game. They want guys to be able to walk off the field with more frequency. But you have to be consistent. You got to let these guys. 15 yards is no joke. You give a team 15 yards, they're gonna, with the way the offenses are rolling right now, they're guaranteed to score.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise in the other way, the Patriots. How often do they? The drives that they stall in this season, it's been almost always because they've had a holding penalty or a sack, and that's the only time when you can really limit a team from getting first downs and moving down the field. So you just need a little consistency.
No, I hear you. I couldn't bear watching that at that point because I think the refs helped, not maybe intentionally, but they helped the Jets on that drive that I was talking about where I think it changed the game. I think it was actually Burris's third touchdown that drive. They were aided by two pass interference calls that were just complete jokes.
That's those are the breaks that the Jets need because their offense is a little anemic right now.
Yeah, I agree.
We should probably take a break.
You want to?
A little bit of a break.
Yeah?
Yeah, quick.
You tired of talking?
I'm not tired of talking. I can go all day. So, yeah, we'll stop for a moment. Remember, you can email us at webradio@patriots.com, or you can give us a little ring at 508-298-0398.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Dear business traveler who's flying away, you can get more out of your working day with plush leather seats including legroom galore to stretch out your knees, feet, and more. Plus 36 channels of DirecTV in your seat gives you something to watch once work is complete. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Edwin, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand at JetBlue.com/business. Based on the average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines, DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Verizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never-been-owned-before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go Pats.
With Patriots Checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops. Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots Checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. And account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochette. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
This is Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio. Want to get inside the playbook? Call John on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
We are back. I am not John Rook. I am Jeff Howe from Nesson.com, joined here by Eric Scalavino. And we are going to head straight to the phones, where we have a familiar face hanging on by. John Rook, how you doing?
Or maybe a familiar voice. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, John?
Excellent, excellent. I'm kind of getting the vibe here, and I'm in Pittsburgh because I'm doing a college game tonight, but as soon as I got down and into the airport today, there's a rather, let's just put it this way, there's a very confident air about the city of Pittsburgh when it comes to the New England Patriots.
Really?
I don't want to say it's cocky, but, you
what,
know.
What gives you the impression?
Well, first of all, the place is decked out in Steeler paraphernalia, which it usually is anyway. Mm. But then when I get into the car, the radio is on the sports radio station here in Pittsburgh, and the people are going nuts on the phone about how, you know, now's the time to finally show, you know, those, you know, bully New England Patriots. And by the way, that is the word they use.
Bully?
Yeah, bully, bully. Oh. And to finally show, you know, Tom Brady that, you know, he doesn't hold the Pittsburgh Steelers number. And, you know, and so it's just, it's kind of a neat little bit of, Homerism to hear it from the other side, to be quite honest with you. I thought it was actually quite entertaining.
That, wow, that's really interesting because, I mean, I don't understand. I understand the Steelers are coming off of a Super Bowl berth and everything, but what happened last year? I mean, they were embarrassed in their home field in a very important game. And then this year, at least for the start of the season for the Steelers, they reminded me of that 2009 team that was coming off the Super Bowl and really just didn't have a whole lot of life on defense. Remember, that was the season when that defense gave up something like 5 or 6 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter and
yep.
didn't have a whole lot of character. And the wins that the Steelers have this season have been over the Seahawks, the Colts by 3 points. Remember that game. The Titans, yeah. the Jaguars, and the Cardinals last week, the losses.
They don't have that look. They don't have that championship look this
year. No, they don't. And they've been better.
They really don't. That's why I thought it was kind of curious because, you know, it's typical Pittsburgh swagger, which is fine. But the one thing I did notice about the tenor to some of the conversation that was going on earlier today was the fact that, you know, the talk show hosts actually had done their homework. And it suggested about last week's, you know, last year's game that, you know, Pittsburgh was beaten by New England and that a lot of the fans came back with, well, but, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers do have 2 Super Bowl championships since the last time the Patriots won one. And again, correctly, the talk show host, you would have thought they were from New England, they basically said, yeah, but they didn't have to go through New England to get it.
Good point.
Yeah, very
good
so,
point. They seem like they have an inferiority complex about,
yes,
about it.
Yes, I definitely got that vibe today. And so it was almost like, you know, a little bit of false bravado out there. Well, we're going to show those bullies, you know, Patriots on, you know, Sunday, that, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers are back and yada yada. And I'm kind of like, wow, I'm not really sure where this comes from, especially since they really, as you just pointed out, fellas, they haven't really beaten anybody this year.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh's offensive line is a mess right now. And, you know, the Patriots' strength, as we've been talking about, it seems to be coming on a little bit more each and every week, is in their defensive line. That's where they spent a lot of time and attention in the offseason. And, you know, Andre Carter had an outstanding game against the Cowboys a couple of weeks ago. And if he can continue that and the pocket can continue to collapse and if they can, you know, figure out a way to keep, you know, Roethlisberger hemmed in rather than get him out on the run, because we all know when he's outside the pocket, he's more effective and has been more effective in the past. And I think the Patriots have an opportunity here to do what they did last year.
Yeah. How many sacks did they give up against the Cardinals in the last game? Because they going into that game, they were averaging 3 a game, 3 sacks a game. They had 18 what? Over 6 weeks. I didn't happen to see what they had.
I didn't.
2.
They gave up 2?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm not really certain.
Okay, so they've given up 20 sacks in
20.
7 games.
Right. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
You bring up the offensive line, and that's a great point. That was something I definitely wanted to get to. There, Maurkice Pouncey is the only guy who has started every game for the Steelers this season. Every other position, obviously, has started at least 2 players.
Mm-hmm.
Left tackle, they've started 3 guys. And it's the same thing that they had last year. It was amazing that offensive line was able to take them to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They were in the same ballpark as what the Bears were doing last year on the offensive line. They were awful.
Yeah, and around the same time, too, they had injuries all over the place. And they were down to, like, using their 8th offensive lineman as a starter. I can't remember his name now off the top of my head, but they were in just dire straits going into that New England game.
You talk about Ligurski?
That's him, Doug Ligurski. Yeah, he came off the bench, and, I mean, they couldn't – field any more offensive linemen in the game because they used all eight of them the week before. I think it was against the Ravens. Might have been. I'm just trying to think back to going into that game last year. But they seem to be in the same type of situation this year. And you're right. I don't know how the hell they got to a Super Bowl with that.
Isn't real tangent here? Isn't Ligurski a tremendous name for a Pittsburgh Steeler?
I mean, by the way, for an offensive lineman, right. Absolutely. Yeah, it wouldn't work if he were like a wide receiver.
No,
you know,
no.
He has to be an offensive lineman.
A wide receiver last night.
No,
they need to draft Lutzenkirchen out of Auburn. That would be a great Steelers.
Right.
I like it. I like it a lot. These guys, you know, I think you kind of pointed out that they didn't have to go through New England last year, and shame on the Patriots for not getting there, you know, to be in that position. But I think the Steelers might have considered themselves somewhat thankful last year to be where they were and on the cusp of potentially winning a Super Bowl. Honestly, Eric, you know, you know, we've talked about this over the last few weeks. I feel better about this game against Pittsburgh than I did so much against either the
Cowboys.
The Jets or the Cowboys.
I agree with you. I had a really good feeling, and I told you this yesterday when we came back from practice. I thought that the team overall had a very serious business-like attitude yesterday. I think that sort of continued today.
Yep.
And I think they're approaching this the right way. They're extremely difficult, as we know, to play coming out of their own bye week.
They won eight in a row.
This is the first time they've ever played the Steelers coming off of a bye, which I think will be interesting because they have sort of a mixed history at Heinz Field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've had some really devastating games. One that I'm thinking of came right around this time, actually on Halloween.
Halloween 2004.
Right, the Matt Light, Rodney Harrison game when both of those guys were lost with injuries. So they've had their moments there both ways. I mean, I think more often than not they've had the upper hand against the Steelers. But I kind of like that what I'm hearing from you, John, about what the air is down there. It kind of seems to me they might be talking themselves into a little bit of overconfidence about this game.
I don't know if it's so much overconfidence. I think that it might very well be. It's almost like, you know, like I said, it's almost a little false bravado. It's almost like they're very nervous about what's coming, so they're putting up a brave front, you know, knowing full well that they expect the inevitable to happen. Now, frankly, this was one of the two or three losses I think I actually picked for the Patriots this year. This was one of them, and I knew that I was going against the grain because it was coming after the bye week, and as you guys have already pointed out, eight straight wins coming off of the bye week, which means that, you know, given extra time to prepare, you got to like Bill Belichick's chances, I think, coming off of a bye week when you have that much extra time, especially going against a team that you know has not only his interest and his respect, but his full attention, like Pittsburgh.
Mm.
So in that regard, I think you have to feel like the Patriots will probably be as prepared for this game as they will be any other single game for the remainder of the regular season. That's number one, while I'm feeling, you know, strong about this. I just don't like the way Pittsburgh comes into this thing health-wise. You know, James Harrison is obviously out still right now for Pittsburgh.
That's a huge help for New England, by the way.
Yeah. So, you know, I just don't know that the matchups right now for Pittsburgh, I'm really not, they're talking about in the newspaper today, in fact, here locally, where they're not sure what they're going to do to match up with Wes Welker. You know, I think there's a possibility, who is it, Ike Taylor. Taylor, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Ike Taylor. They're not sure, you know, because they feel like he's probably their best cover corner, but he doesn't traditionally go man up against the slot receiver for the other team. So because of that fact, they don't expect Ike Taylor to see any, maybe very little, if any time at all, against Welker. And I'm scratching my head on that one, saying, well, if he's your best cover corner, and Welker is the best receiver in the NFL, if you ask Michael Irvin that anyway right now,
mm-hmm.
he thinks Wes Welker is the best receiver in the NFL, then why wouldn't you try to see, why wouldn't you want to put best on best? You mean you're going to take a chance with something less than that? I said, hey, more power to you, and if Tom Brady doesn't target Wes Welker 15 times, then Tom's just dumb.
Well, John, I think the Steelers have bigger problems, and Jeff and I talked about this before you came on the air. Jeff, what were Gronk's numbers last year at Pittsburgh?
5 for 72 and 3 scores.
And
yep.
Here were Aaron Hernandez's numbers from that game, John. 0 for 0, 0.
Wow.
He did nothing, and he was coming off a game where he had 2 touchdowns at Cleveland, was the only bright spot in that loss to Cleveland, actually, last year.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't see how, if Dick LeBeau says, okay, we're not going to let Rob Gronkowski beat us this year, not the way he did last year, You have Aaron Hernandez, and I don't think he's going to get shut out again this year. And then you have the Wes Welker problem. I don't see how the matchups just don't look good to me for if I'm a Steeler.
They don't.
They don't.
The matchup clearly do not favor Pittsburgh here. And, you know, with those kind of weapons at your disposal, those options, and not really, you know, sure. I mean, I give Polamalu a lot of credit, but he can't cover all three guys. He can only help out with one player at a time. They're going to have to choose their poison, and that's going to leave two very strong options. And of course, that also leaves possibility of Deion Branch somewhere floating in there as well.
Yeah, let's not forget about him. Right.
Yeah, so I don't see how Pittsburgh, frankly, the more I sit here and I think about it, the more I'm trying to talk my end to the same kind of result as we saw last year, something along those, 41-24 type variety.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Benny had a good game last year against the Steelers, did he not? I can't remember his numbers, but I want to say he got in the end zone twice.
There were a lot of guys who got in the end zone multiple times.
Since we just started talking about the running game, with Kevin Faulk now coming back to practice last week, his clock started now as he came off the PUP.
Right.
Do you think there's any chance that he gets activated for this game?
I asked him that today, just because I think if there's anybody on the pup list right now who could come back, it would be Kevin Faulk. Obviously, it starts with the respect that they have for him from the top down in this organization.
Right.
They don't necessarily need him as much, just because Danny Woodhead and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis have been doing better than I think expected, at least in blitz pickup or in pass protection. But when I asked Kevin if this was one of those games where they might look to him to come in and just fill that one role, the first thing he said was, well, Benny and Danny have been doing such a good job at it, you don't know if they're going to need me just yet. And that wasn't a direct quote, but that was the gist of what he was saying. I asked him if this was kind of like a step in the right direction, coming back from practice and all this other stuff. And he said, you know what, I felt good enough where I thought I could have started practicing in week one, but at some point you have to trust the coaches who have seen these types of injuries before. They wanted to rein me in, so they reined me in, and that's how it happened. But I think Kevin recognizes that the guys who are ahead of him on the depth chart for injury reasons have been doing a pretty good job. But if they want to bring him back just for that role, I think they would do that. And the other thing, I don't think Belichick would bring him back for the sole purpose of getting him 5 to 8 snaps. That's not Belichick's style. I mean, Brian Waters started in week one. Week one. He was used on a rotation until Copen went down. Mm-hmm. But Bill Belichick, if you're going to come back, Logan Mankins last year in Cleveland came back, went right into it. If you're going to come back, he rotated too, though. Okay, you're right. But in a running back in this system, you're going to rotate.
This is a committee backfield. You know that going in. Because the reason I want to bring that up in this game is because we haven't, and I'm surprised, seen much of Shane Vereen, who was thought to be the Kevin Faulk type back when they drafted him. Stephen Ridley was thought to be the Ben Jarvis Green Ellis type back. Similar styles. You have two veterans, Woodhead and Green Ellis, and Faulk. And you have the two rookies, Vereen and Ridley, who similar styles to those veterans that they're backing up. And if they haven't been using Vereen,
right?
I think it's. I mean, why not throw another weapon at the Steelers and bring in Faulk, who you know what he can do.
Exactly.
You know he can help out returning punts. You know what he can do coming out of the backfield. You know he can carry the ball in between the tackles if you need to. That's just something else for them to think about. And the fact that he answered you that way makes me think even more that maybe you could see a surprise activation for him, because what better thing than to just at the last minute say, oh, yeah, by the way, Kevin Faulk's going to play in this game too.
I really think he could also come in and alleviate some of the pressure off of Welker, because I know that the Patriots are going to become, and I'm sure they feel like more and more teams are going to start taking Welker out of the equation, or at least trying to take Welker out of the equation, because he's had such a phenomenal year to this point in time. I think if Faulk is able to physically come back, I could see him returning punts again just to release some of the pressure on West and allow him to concentrate on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, I will. 2 points I want to get to there. The punt thing, I think, that's Edelman's job, and I think in huge situations, they're going to give Kevin Faulk the chance. I mean, if they know that Kevin Faulk is going to be lining up at the 10-yard line to return a punt, or if their returner is going to be lining up at the 10, they want Faulk doing it over anybody. So that's, yeah, I agree with that. But I still think the depth chart would be Edelman, Welker, Faulk, unless it's a huge situation where they have to field the punt. In terms of maybe relieving or giving them more options if teams start to take away Wes Welker, I would disagree, because it's not like Wes Welker came out of nowhere to have this huge start. He has been superior to what he showed last year, because he doesn't have the knee to worry about. His explosion is on another level. And he's having, I think, I wrote it earlier this week, he's having probably his best season as a Patriot. Get into a lot more of that later if we want, but I think teams are trying to take away Wes Welker, but he's just been playing far too good to let that happen.
I can certainly see that. I'm not sure how much the concerted effort has been for teams to try to take him away, because I'm not so sure teams are physically equipped with the personnel to take him away. He's such a unique matchup in terms of his skill set and the fact that he's just built low to the ground. I mean, there's no defensive backs out there that can stay with the guy that low to the ground. So I don't know that anybody matches up with Wes. That's what makes him such a unique weapon. Hey, that's why the Patriots went out and stole him from Miami and picked him up years ago, because it was one of those things where, hey, we can't match up with this guy. It's the classic, hey, if you can't beat him, join him situation. And I just don't think there's anybody else in the league that can match up with him.
Well, Dallas did the best job of anybody so far, mm-hmm, of doing that, of at least trying to limit his numbers, his productivity.
Credit Rob Ryan there. But
yeah,
you mentioned getting him from Miami. They gave up a 2 and a 7 for him. And from the way this team doesn't deal draft picks, the fact that they gave up a 2 and a 7 for him after basically just one above-average season says a lot to how they projected him to fit through into this offense.
One above-average season and one particularly memorable game against this team.
Yeah.
Against this team,
which,
yes,
I think,
exactly,
sold them, right, on the fact that he could do what they want him to do and what he's,
right,
what he's been able to do since he got here.
Mm-hmm.
But, I still come back to... I hate to keep harping on it, but I think it's going to be really what's going to decide this game is the two tight ends. And I just, you mentioned Rob Ryan doing his best to take away Welker, or at least limiting him. Dick LeBeau's no slouch.
Right.
He's what happened last year aside, I think it's going to be mighty difficult for the Steelers, especially with Harrison being out. Now you have, was it Jason Worlds is now going to be stepping up and trying to play in that spot?
They've been using a lot of Lawrence Timmons,
moving him around. I don't know how they're going to cover both of these tight ends.
That's a really interesting dynamic, because Lawrence Timmons last year came on and had his best season. He was very, very good as an inside linebacker in that defense, and I think he was one of the major reasons why that defense took a step up from that 09 team. He's pretty good in coverage. So I wonder if having him as an outside linebacker could kind of, in a weird way, help them in terms of covering the tight ends. And I don't know if I'm overthinking it or what, but I think Greg Bedard of the Globe wrote today that the Steelers only blitzed the Patriots 7 times in that game last year. And I might have that wrong, and if I do, that it's my mistake. But I think that's what I read. So maybe the plan is to drop more guys back than they typically do anyway, which would be a variation of what they do. And the thing you gotta like about the Steelers defense, although it's to a fault to an extent, is that they do what they do and they really don't care about the other team's offense. This is gonna show me some stuff this week, if they can do some things to actually change what they do and show that they are willing to take the steps to morph into a different type of game plan, because if they sit back with their two outside cornerbacks like they did all last year, they're going to get torched and they're going to give up another 30-something points in their home field.
That's absolutely right. And the other thing is that if they decide they're going to sit back in coverage, that absolutely flies in the face of conventional wisdom on how you beat the Patriots. I mean, they even wrote about it in the Tribune Review today here in Pittsburgh, how the Steelers were one of the teams that has figured out a way to potentially beat Tom Brady, even though they haven't been able to execute it. You know, you have, if you put him to the ground five times, you're going to win. If you pick him off four times, you're going to win. Or the third thing is your offense has to score 41 points. If you can score 41, you're going to win.
And even
now, all three of those things are pretty daunting tasks, but you know, they were also thinking here that, well, you know, hey, the Steelers are capable of doing any one of those three.
And
I'm not so sure.
Well, even against this low-ranked Patriots defense, I think it's going to be difficult to score 41 points.
I would agree.
But the more we talk about this, guys, I'm starting to now think maybe the Steelers will overthink this because they got torched through the air last year so badly. And maybe this is a Ben Jarvis day or a Stephen Ridley day where the Patriots decide, okay, we're thinking that you're going to attack us this way to try to take away Welker or Gronk or Hernandez. Let's just run the ball, run the clock down, make this a short, low-scoring game.
If they see something early that the Steelers are changing and they're selling out against the pass, the Patriots would be glad to do that. Kind of brings me back to that Minnesota game plan that they had on that Monday night when they went against the top-ranked run defense in the league and they threw it like 35 straight times.
Right, yeah.
Didn't the Cowboys do that to an extent, though?
Against New England?
Yes.
You mean, well, I'm talking about New England doing this against Pittsburgh, though.
Oh, you mean, I see what you're saying. New England against Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Trying to run the ball and shorten the field?
Right. Right. If so... Because we always know Bill likes to do what the opposite of what we think he's going to do, generally. So if we're thinking, okay, based on last year, you know, Gronk had a huge game. How are you going to take away Welker? How are you going to take? We're all talking about the passing game, and we're really kind of giving short shrift to the running game. And I'm wondering whether or not they just say, maybe let's try to set a trap for them by just start off running the ball.
Right. Right.
And see if they're going to to not do what they normally do, as Jeff said, and maybe try to have the field spread out so much. If that's the case, if they're dropping people back and Timmons is off the line and Woodley isn't, you know, if Woodley's their only guy rushing, run the ball. Force them to show their hand.
Makes sense to me. Although I really would be surprised, honestly, if that happened.
Only other thing, we'll just get back to that offensive line problem that Pittsburgh had. Patriots can say, you know what, we're going to go out and score 35 points. Pretty sure this offensive line can't support a team going out and scoring 35 to match them.
Right.
So how's the weather down there, John? Is that going to be a factor? Have you seen any forecasts, early forecasts?
Rainy for the next couple of days. It's supposed to clear up, I think, by game time on the weekend.
And we got a 4:15 kickoff.
Yeah, so I think you'll be okay for kickoff on Sunday, but it's kind of dreary here now.
Because I keep looking, I've been looking at forecasts since about last week, once the 10-day starts to show up and you can actually get like your first look at the weekend. And I've, like, every day it's changed from Sunday's going to be, Saturday and Sunday are either going to be rainy or sunny, both here and in Pittsburgh. So I don't know what the field conditions are going to be, because that's one thing, too. Heinz Field is notorious for having a terrible pitch.
Yeah. A pitch?
Yes.
Wow.
How about that?
I took that one out of
terrible pitch.
Unbelievable.
I'm going to
walk away. I'm going to take a lap here. Well, the one thing I'll say there is...
They have terrible towels and terrible field.
Oh, boy. But looking at the weather, I mean, it's not like you're bringing a bathing suit to Pittsburgh. The options for Pittsburgh in late October are pretty... You kind of know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, but, you know, that, like I said, I just remember... watching games at Heinz Field where it was almost like Soldier Field last year.
Yeah.
When there were just like chunks of mud and clumps of sod coming up. And I mean, the field they played on last year wasn't perfect either.
Wasn't last year when they went down to Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Wasn't that when they changed that 2/3 of their special teams battery too?
Something like that. Yeah. I think that's part of the charm of playing here, that the field sucks. Frankly,
don't get me wrong, I do too, because I can't stand field turf. I hate the artificial surfaces that everybody's going to. Colleges, high schools, you never see real grass anymore. And I know it's hard to take care of, but that's the way.
Eric, your boss just spent millions of dollars to put that in at your very stadium.
Fred doesn't have that kind of money.
That's also true.
Well, Well, John, thanks for calling into your own show, actually.
It's not the first time he's done this either, you know. He loves doing this.
Yeah.
Well, I'm appreciative, as always, of you guys holding down the fort while I, you know, I try to somehow make a living out here.
All right. Sounds good. We will we'll see you back here soon. We are going to take a break. When we come back from that break, I just realized that I completely forgot to start checking the emails. So it was a good
thing.
They're
piled up, huh?
Yeah, there's a few. We will get to those. So if you sent one, I am not ignoring you. I am just technically insufficient.
Overwhelmed. You're overwhelmed, aren't you?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I have a computer. I have two computer screens that I can use one mouse for, and that has just completely blown my mind. So anyway, yeah, that's what we'll get back to. We will see you on the other side.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
You're a business traveler who's flying away. You can get more out of your working day with plush leather seats, including legroom galore, to stretch out your knees, feet, and more. Plus 36 channels of DirecTV in your seat gives you something to watch once work is complete. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Edwin, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand at JetBlue.com/business. Based on the average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines, DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Droid. Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Horizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never-been-owned-before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with cheese combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help. I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go Pats.
With Patriots Checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit card.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops. Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots Checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Hey guys, pumpkin coffee is back at Dunkin' Donuts.
Awesome. But what's with the guy behind you playing the timpani drum?
It's a big deal. Dunkin's pumpkin coffee is back for fall.
So you hired him to play every time you say pumpkin coffee?
And when I say something smart in a meeting.
This is big. Pumpkin is back at Dunkin' Donuts. Hurry in for a hotter iced pumpkin coffee before it's gone. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Guys, I think the lady at Dunkin' Donuts is totally into me.
Why is that?
She made a delicious chicken salad sandwich just for me with celery and herbs on an oven-toasted croissant.
Yeah, they definitely do that for everyone.
Can I just enjoy this moment with Dunkin' Chicken Salad Woman in my heart?
Hurry in for Dunkin's new Bakery Fresh Chicken and Tuna Salad Sandwiches. They're hand-built just for you. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary.
All right, guys, ready for 2 weeks in the wild or what?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, then strap on those backpacks.
Hey, let me just check this text.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, no.
What?
Not now.
What is it?
McRib is back.
What?
We're going to miss it.
This backpack just got really heavy, guys.
Everybody back in the car. We are going to McDonald's.
Yeah, good.
McRib is back for just $2.79. But that saucy pork goodness is here for a limited time.
So what do you think? You guys want to do a golf trip instead, maybe?
That's kind of nature, right? Right,
no.
The simple joy of big news. Price and participation may vary for a limited time.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
We are back here. I am Jeff Howe from Nesson.com, filling in for the second hour.
Can I just call you not John Rook? Instead of Jeff Howe?
Yes, that'll be my new Twitter handle.
Not John Rook. At Nesson.com.
There you go. That's, as you heard, Kevin has jumped over on this side of the glass, the side where we're having all of the fun. Although, from the giggling I've heard on that side of the glass, I'm not so sure about that. We're also joined by Eric Friends. I know him as a Nesson.com intern, but he also has been writing about the Patriots for
BleacherReport.com.
Glad I didn't say the wrong one.
That's all right.
That's my bad. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing awesome. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm never been better. Never been better. As I said before the break, I wanted to get some of these emails because of my technological shortcomings. I completely forgot about them and forgot how to do this thing. It's amazing that I work for a website, I guess. But thank you.
Round of applause. You learned how to read emails. Web radio, patriots.com, by the way, is how you get hold of us.
One step at a time here. The first one was a Shane Vereen question, and that's from Brian. Anyway, the gist of it is, where is Shane Vereen? And the answer to that is he had a hamstring issue in training camp that really slowed his progression. He couldn't catch up to speed. I think there were some definite high hopes for him. We talked about him as a guy who could fill in behind Danny Woodhead and Kevin Faulk in that type of role on the depth chart. It just hasn't happened yet. And Stephen Ridley obviously came out flying. Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and Danny Woodhead are still as serviceable as they were last year. So I think Vereen is just, he's just slipped too far down the depth chart. And until there's an injury, I know Danny Woodhead missed some time a couple weeks ago, but until there's a need to get Shane Vereen into the game and to get some more carries, I just don't think you're going to see him. This could potentially be one of those redshirt type of rookie seasons for him, like Taylor Price had last year.
Seems to be the odd man out.
Yeah,
definitely in this rotation.
I think he gets pushed down the depth chart a little further if Kevin Faulk comes back, because they have a pretty similar role. So that's another reason, you know.
And they did not bring Kevin Faulk back to lose his job to Shane Vereen. That is one thing that I am very certain of. So yeah, you're not going to see Shane Vereen. It's not because he's not a good player. I still have high hopes for him. I think he's going to have a good career. He was not a second round pick for no reason. He is a very dynamic, explosive type of player who is going to be good in space. It's just taken a little more time than they probably hoped. But
and to be fair, he's a pretty nice safety blanket to have too, in case a guy like Woodhead goes down or a guy like Faulk can't come back. Like, he's a nice guy to have sitting there on the shelf to be able to plug into that role.
Yeah, and I liked what they did with the running back position this offseason. They basically overhauled it.
They stocked up.
Right, way that they did with the tight ends the year before.
Exactly.
They drafted the guy, Vereen in the second, Ridley in the third, and they gave Woodhead that extension midway through last year to lock him up. They got rid of Sammy Morris. And
personal favorite, you had to bring that up. That hurts.
Hey, Sammy Morris is a great guy. I love talking to him. He is. And Fred Taylor retired. So they really changed things up. They geared more toward the present with Benny and Woodhead as well as the future with Ridley and Vereen.
And I know you were out of practice today, is that correct?
Yes.
How did Benny look today? I know he's been a little nicked up with that turf toe.
It's not like we see a ton of practice. It's really hard. Once training camp breaks, it's really hard to get an impression of how guys look at practice.
Yeah.
I asked Benny about the toe yesterday, and he just said, "I'm not talking about injuries," with a big smile on his face. He played a couple weeks ago. They had the week off. I don't think it's anything that's a big issue.
Yeah, it's good to see him out there today because the week, I think it was leading into that Dallas game.
It was.
He all of a sudden just disappeared for a day. You remember that?
He popped up on the injury report on Wednesday, and he was limited, and then he was absent on Thursday and returned Friday, which makes me think that he suffered it on Wednesday at practice. So there was nothing that happened in the game before. I think it was that Jets game when he left the game and had anything that made it look like he had a toe injury. One thing that I think was interesting was that yesterday Ben Jarvis said that he recently spoke to Fred Taylor, and the two were very close during their 2 years here together. Fred Taylor had a bad toe injury forever. So I wonder how much advice he got there. I thought one thing that Ben Jarvis said was that the football knowledge was basically given to him over the last 2 years. He's not calling up Fred and asking him about certain plays or what to do in this situation, at least not as much. But I do wonder if he asked him about the toe and how he dealt with that.
Yeah, and you got to think for the trainers, too. It might be helpful having to gone through that learning experience with Fred Taylor last year.
Yeah.
Not knocking them, but for him not to be able to get back on the field after, something that you and I consider kind of like an incidental injury. It's not like a major season-ending thing. It's kind of like tennis elbow.
Yeah,
you kind of make fun of it.
Well, with Fred Taylor's injury, too, I think that you look at that as another reason maybe why they stocked up so much on running backs, because going into Fred Taylor's time as a Patriot, everybody was talking about him as a guy that could potentially hammer the ball down the middle of the field. And, he obviously was only on the field for a few games, so you never got to live up to that potential. And with that, I think you bring about maybe some higher expectations. So you kind of have to bring guys along and to get younger guys that, are very impressionable and very, versatile. I think that helps, obviously, to battle against injuries. So.
And we just got an interesting little nugget here passed to us here from John in the web radio email account that says Shane Vereen was taken at number 56 overall in the draft. DeMarco Murray, who had his coming out party last week, I believe had like 253 yards, something along those lines.
Cowboys single game record.
Was taken by Dallas at 71. Now, that's not really fair at this point since we haven't even seen Shane Vereen take the field on a consistent basis.
Right.
But it gives you an idea of what the Patriots thought of Shane Vereen in this draft.
Yeah, exactly. You can go in the other direction.
But try to compare him to DeMarco Murray at this stage without having seen any of Shane Vereen is just completely unfair.
And different offenses, different roles. There's nobody in this offense who is going to rip off 200-something yards in a single game. It's just that's not what they're built on. Unless it's like one of those snow games, like that 59-0 game when they just pound somebody and just run the ball 30 times in the second half, nobody's running for 200 yards in this offense. And even if somebody did, with the rotation that they use, they're just going to bring in somebody else. I think just to get off topic just a little bit, when Corey Dillon went down in 2005, that offense went completely off track. They relied so heavily on Corey Dillon that season that when he went down, they struggled to find some semblance of a running game. In 2006, they spent a first-round pick on Lawrence Maroney. They used both guys in the 2006 season, and that was the birth of when Bill Belichick decided he was no longer going to put everything into one running back because an injury in that instance is going to destroy an offense. If Adrian Peterson goes down in Minnesota, they've got no chance to move the ball on offense, especially with their quarterback situation, but I think you get the gist of what I'm saying.
Yeah, Ponder looked all right.
He did.
I think it was better than I thought he was going to do, but I'm not rushing to pick him up on the fantasy waiver wire quite yet after what I saw.
And he did that against a Green Bay defense that is really, really underachieving this year. And I think everybody wants to say that the Packers are hands down the best team in football, and I'm not saying that's wrong. But I think the way that Dom Capers' defense has fallen off, I don't think that they're a cut above everybody else. I think their offense is as good as anybody else. They could go toe-to-toe with this Patriots offense. But that defense, deserves a little more attention than it's getting, because they are not even close to the level they were performing at last year.
Yeah, I mean, Ponder, when you look at, I mean, it's his first NFL start. Granted, he was at home. It wasn't like he was at Lambeau or anything like that, but threw for over 300 yards on that defense. And, you know, his rating at 63 was, eh, it is what it is. But his completion percentage was still under 50%. It wasn't the greatest thing. It's not the greatest thing since sliced bread right here.
No, and I think that, I mean, obviously we talk about how Green Bay's defense has been struggling a bit this year, but they actually have one of the top 10 pass defenses in the league when you look at it from a passer rating perspective. They're actually better than Pittsburgh in defensive passer rating. So that's not a bad defense they're going up against. It's a very talented group, and I think that, you know, Ponder obviously got off to a decent start against a very solid group.
And it's speaking about pass defense here, as the Patriots head into this weekend, given what we've seen from the Pittsburgh Steelers through, what, 7 games so far, I believe they're 5-2, it's definitely not your typical, it's not your mothers and fathers and grandmothers and grandfathers Pittsburgh Steelers. It's a much more pass-oriented offense than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
Mendenhall's having a very iffy year. He had that one game where I think he had over 100 yards in the first half, and he disappeared in the second half after that. What concerns me is the fact that they're throwing the ball so much, and they're throwing the ball so well with what the Patriots are packing in the secondary right now.
Yeah, Roethlisberger's always been a really explosive quarterback. I think, obviously, we talk about him outside the pocket.
He makes plays. Absolutely. Keeps plays alive.
When the play breaks down, that's where he's at his strongest. But I think that last year, obviously, the Patriots had a lot of success against them when they brought a heavy pass rush.
Yeah.
And, you know, that Pittsburgh offensive line, once again, guys, looks pretty shaken up.
I think that's their weakness. We can all agree that that's
absolutely
their weakness.
I hate the direction of the Steelers offense. I love watching the Steelers play. I love the attitude that they bring to the field. I think James Harrison is a complete idiot off the field, but between the lines, I love him as a player. I think he's just a fascinating person to watch. But offensively, they've lost their identity because,
I agree.
And I don't know if it's because they don't trust Mendenhall. And if that's the case, then I would give Tomlin a break. But I don't like the fact that they are so air heavy. Roethlisberger right now is on pace to throw more passes than he has in his career.
Yep.
And they are also on pace to have a greater pass to run disparity than they've had at any point. Well, I mean, it's a given, but any point in Roethlisberger's tenure in Pittsburgh. And I don't understand why they're so reliant on it. They'll run the ball a few times and then they'll just drop back and chuck it a bunch. And that's fine when you've got a guy like Mike Wallace, who is as great of a downfield threat as there is in the NFL. But I mean, Hines Ward is still a great possession receiver, or a very good possession receiver at this point.
Yep.
But I don't understand their need to drop back and throw the thing all the time. It boggles my mind.
Ward and Heath Miller have definitely evolved into that underneath. I think they're Ben Roethlisberger's safety blankie, if you will. And then you have Wallace and Brown, who have emerged as deep threats, making big plays all over the field this year. I think if you were to look at the amount of times they're throwing the ball as compared to rushing the ball, I think they're throwing like 67% of the time this year. If you were to look at that, you would think that they've been down in most of their games this year, when in fact they've, you know, won 5 games already. Speaking of which, I wanted to ask you guys, this was an interesting question. When you look at the teams that they've played, now, they got blown out by Baltimore. You know, quality team, obviously. I think we can all agree on that. They lost a close game at Houston, who's, you know, appears to be at least another quality team. Their 5 wins have come against Seattle and Indy, who are pretty hapless at this point. Tennessee, who's a very average ball club at best.
Below average.
Jacksonville, who's just awful. Putrid if you watch the Monday night game. And Arizona, who we don't consider gangbusters here. Is their record, when you look at their record, do you kind of take it with a grain of salt, considering they haven't beat one of these quality elite AFCs, or not even AFCs, but AFC teams, if you consider the Ravens and the Texans?
No doubt about it. And they're better. They've been better the last 3 weeks. But I don't think that they are. Like I said earlier, they remind me of that 2009 team that just didn't have anything on defense, and they didn't have any character. And maybe it will get better when James Harrison comes back. But They aren't playing at the level that they were at last year, and that's going to cause them some problems down the road. This game this week is going to show me a whole lot more about the Steelers than it will about the Patriots. I want to see what the character is of this Pittsburgh team for all of the reasons that we've been talking about just in this segment alone.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, you look at the next three games they're playing, they're up against the Patriots, and then they play the Ravens, and then they play at Bengals again. So those are three pretty tough games. I mean, it's not like they've played anybody that's that outstanding so far this season, besides obviously the Ravens have been really good, but yeah, they have three very strong opponents coming up, so we'll learn a lot about them for sure.
And I would expect the Steelers to lose these next two games against New England and Baltimore. That'll
just
put them
in it out there.
Yeah,
5-4.
That'll put them at 5-4
on the line.
That Bengals team, I think they're a little more fraudulent than the 4-2 record shows.
Yep,
I think that's fairly safe to say. But think about that. That could be at worst a 4-4 Bengals team against a 5-4 Steelers team.
It's a big game.
Yeah.
It's a huge divisional game right there.
I mean, that could be, I mean, the Steelers, all right, I don't want to start predicting games a month from now. The Steelers will probably win that game, but, I mean, who picked that game to be one of those wild card type games that a team is going to need in late November?
Exactly.
Because odds are, I think, I mean, at this point in time, I mean, if you had to put a gun in my head, I'd predict that Baltimore is going to win that division.
Oh, yeah.
So, like you said, that Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game, they could be, you know, their records could be even, or there could be, you know, maybe a game difference,
right.
But that could very well be, you know, a huge wild card type game. And Pittsburgh also has to play them again later in the season. So those two games on their schedule will loom pretty large.
I do want to get to, before we get to the other emails, I got to get to Mike Wallace. I got to get this off my chest.
Okay.
And he's a tremendous downfield threat, and I think he has improved his ability to get down the field. I think he reads safeties a lot better than he did last year. I've noticed in some of his long touchdowns that he's caught the safety flat-footed, or there's somebody's just fallen asleep on the play, and he's been able to take advantage of that. And when you have a quarterback who can throw the ball to the moon, it's never a bad thing to have a guy who has, it's seemingly 3.940 type speed. He's so incredibly fast, but he is not a complete wide receiver. And I think the fact that he is so good at fantasy has created this delusion about him. He is not a complete receiver. He doesn't run every route. He might try to run every route, but he's just not that good at it. Last year, I knew for a fact, I mean, I talked to enough people to know that there was not a whole lot of respect for Mike Wallace as a football player last year. And I think this, look, they love his speed, and that's great, and he can run fast, and good for him. But this year he's better, and I think that he is thinking the game more, and he's taking some good strides. But I'm going to write about Mike Wallace later today, so maybe I'll fall into this trap. But I know people like to
read
about it.
So catch that on Nesson.com.
Exactly.
I'll be posting it.
There you go. This is a tandem right here.
Right. He's not a complete receiver. He has a lot of work to do. And, hey, if he comes out and he has an 80-yard touchdown this week, then he has done his job. But I think I just want people to take a step back on the Mike Wallace hype and note that he's not one of the 10, 15, 20 best receivers in this league.
Yeah, I'd put him above the other track stars, Darius Heyward-Bey,
guys like that. Yeah.
But I mean, absolutely right. I think that, you know, he does have a bit more of a diverse tree route running.
Here's an interesting little nugget to go along with your point here. The last couple weeks they played Jacksonville and Arizona,
mm-hmm.
two subpar football teams, and he's had 2 and 3 catches respectively.
See, there
if you want to crown him, then crown their ass.
So you go from opening the season like gangbusters, and he's, you know, having 8 catches a game, to, I won't say disappearing. The Steelers still won those football games,
mm-hmm.
but you know how many times lately, and I say lately meaning this year, and you want to consider last year, it's not often you see a guy like Wes Welker that we get to watch on a every day, every week basis here have, you know, 2-3 catches. It's usually like 6 or 7 in a down week.
Yeah, exactly. Right, a down week. He just had, what, 54 yards or something like that against the Cowboys?
And that's the thing, Jeff. When you look at the yardage, Wallace is averaging 20 yards per catch, and a lot of that's inflated by that 95-yard touchdown he had against the Cardinals. And he's had like an 81-yard touchdown, too, against Indy, you know, bad football teams where he just, you know, probably ran past people.
That's all it was. That Indy touchdown was exactly that. I remember watching that after the Buffalo game. And that was, like I said, I'll credit him for being a good downfield receiver and seeing when there is a weakness in the deep coverage and taking advantage of that. But I don't like the fact that he is being compared to some of the better receivers in the league. I just don't think that's fair. He's not as good. And you mentioned the quote-unquote down week. That's not what we're saying, but production-wise, statistically, statistic-wise.
You look at the amount of catches, yeah.
Right. But he still had the clutch catches. He had three catches on Brady's game-winning touchdown drive. And they were big catches. That last one, he had the catch right before Hernandez's touchdown on a throw that Tom Brady had no business making and a catch that Wes Welker had no business making. I mean, the fact that was a completed pass was phenomenal in itself. So, yeah, the value that Welker has, he's not – I think because of Michael Irvin's comments saying that Welker's the best wide receiver in the league, I disagree with that, but he's as valuable as anybody in the league to their offense, and he's right there with Calvin Johnson in terms of value.
Yeah, and when you think of the plays that make him valuable, I think of third and fourth down.
Right.
When this team is in trouble and you need a four-yard completion, a six-yard completion, Brady's looking there, and he's looking at 87. Those two guys are his money guys when he absolutely, you know, you don't need to score a touchdown, but I just need to keep this drive alive. I need to keep the offense on the field. Those are the two guys who I think he has the most faith in to pick up, you know, these key catches.
He had two fourth down catches on that touchdown drive in Buffalo.
I remember that first one in Buffalo, you know, the second of the two fourth down conversions was the touchdown where he dove in. But that first one, he had, like, you know, no business. He went completely up in the air.
Yeah.
And I thought when Brady let that ball go, I was up in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And when Brady let that ball go, I was like, oh, this, it's over. And then all of a sudden, like, Mighty Mouse comes flying out of nowhere, hops up and snatches the thing. It's unbelievable. The
thing with Welker is, I mean, you look at third, fourth down, goal line situation. The Patriots come out and they line them up and run them in that inward motion. They're essentially saying teams, hey, Wes Welker's running the out route. Stop him. I dare you. Most teams can't do it. That's why I think he's so valuable. Teams know what he's going to do and still can't stop
him. He ran it for a third down conversion against Revis.
He did. And three of his touchdowns have been on a simple out route. Well, one was a little bit of a variation, but three of his touchdowns have been on an out route this season. He runs that route better than any receiver in the NFL. And that's a good thing to say about somebody. Another receiver from an email here there's not really a name in the email. But, oh no, Gene in Daytona. How are you?
Mean Gene. He's one of our loyal listeners here.
Oh, okay.
Patriots.com.
Right. I was looking at the email address and didn't see the email.
You don't mess with Mean Gene.
That's
for sure.
Ocho has had some big games against Pittsburgh. Do you see him getting more snaps this week? Well, he has. There's no doubt about that, but that's when he was playing him twice a year with Cleveland. Cincinnati. So, I don't know if he'll get more snaps. Well, he'll probably get more than he had last week. I mean, the last 34 offensive snaps after he ran that wrong route on that weird gimmicky type formation that he had. Those last 34 snaps afterward.
He got put
in timeout. He was on the field for one of them, and it was a screenplay to the other side of the field to Woodhead. A failed screenplay, actually. And so, yeah, he was, I mean, I don't want to say he was benched, but he was as close to being benched as possible.
Yeah, there's no other way to put it, really.
Yeah, that was a really weird play, and Ocho Cinco was definitely supposed to run a quick slant because Brady looked to Hernandez on the right side. They had the diamond formation. It was Hernandez, Gronkowski, Welker, and Branch. And Hernandez was in the back, so the three guys at the top of the diamond were supposed to set a screen. The Cowboys read it beautifully, and they had a guy beelining it toward Hernandez. It might have been a pick six, but at the very least, Hernandez would have gotten his bell rung into all the way through the bye week. So I don't know if Hernandez was there as a decoy to then turn it around and throw it to Ocho Cinco, but I know at the very least he looked at Ocho Cinco, either didn't see something right or it was a decoy, and then he turned back around to Ocho Cinco, who clearly had no idea what he was supposed to be doing.
He was standing there.
He was.
Literally.
Well, and then he started jogging a little bit to the outside and kept his right arm, I think it was his right arm, on the outside shoulder of the cornerback and just kind of looked back at Brady. So obviously he had no idea what he was supposed to be doing, but with the way that Brady turned so quickly and looked, you could tell that Ocho Cinco was supposed to run a quick slant, and he didn't do it, and that's why he hit the bench.
And he heard about it on his way over to the bench a little bit from the crowd here, which was the first time I had heard, you know, people start to get on him here in Foxborough.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Every time he was touching the ball at training camp, it was, woo, Chad Ocho Cinco.
Yeah, he was the greatest thing since sliced bread at training camp, I'll tell you. Even running the tree routes with nobody covering him, every time he caught the ball, it was like, you know, God knows, it was like, you know, Brady was signing autographs, as rare as that is.
He could still be very useful for this team, and I hear people say, oh, you might as well cut him because he's useless, but He hasn't been there. He hasn't been right. There's no denying that. He still is not, from what I've been told. I was told this as early as training camp that he just didn't know the plays yet. Eventually, he'll figure it out. And Deion Branch has only played 16 games once in his entire career. There's a good chance that at some point he's going to get banged up with something, and they'll need to take him out. Injuries happen, obviously. And he had his chance when Hernandez went down for a couple games earlier and wasn't able to step up. I think right now the Patriots have to hope, at minimum, Ocho Cinco has it together in order to be a relied-upon weapon by December or playoff time. If they want to release him after that and void the last 2 years of his contract, go right ahead. But I think it would be a mistake to get rid of him right now.
So, Jeff, and you know, we've talked about this a lot on these airwaves, but I'd be interested to get your opinion. We've had the debate whether or not the fact that he's been reined in a little bit here and he's been put on a leash, he hasn't been the Twitter machine and the public relations nightmare that he was in other places. And a lot of people have kind of debated and had open debates. And, you know, I know Chris Gasper wrote a piece suggesting that, you know, maybe if you let him be himself, maybe if you let him have a little bit more fun, he would produce more. Now, what's your thought? Is it just strictly not knowing the playbook, or is it, you know, is this guy pouting and we're taking away his personality here and that's kind of making him not able to perform?
I think it's the playbook. I mean, well, I know it's the playbook.
This is the playbook.
I think it's gone on a whole lot longer than anybody expected. I mean, when I was told at the end of the preseason that he was having issues with the playbook, everybody said, he'll be fine by week one, don't worry about it. So it's obviously the progression is a lot slower. They didn't trade him to hope that he would trade for him to hope that he would be good in December and January. So things are very far behind schedule. His personality, I think he's at a different point in his football career. He could be the guy that he wants to be. I think that would probably get him thrown out of here a lot quicker. That's the other reason why I wouldn't cut him, like a lot of people are suggesting. He's not a disruption in the locker room. I think he's disappointed with the fact that he's not contributing, but he's still been an excellent player out of practice. So it's not like he's performing poorly in games and then just saying, you know what, forget it, I don't need to practice. He's still got the same positive attitude. He's still the same good guy. So he's still been, from what I understand, he's been a perfect teammate.
Model citizen. Yeah.
Right. But, I mean,
he's an expensive practice squatter.
He sure is. Sure. I mean, look, Ross Ventrone has been as great of a practice player as they've had here for the last season and a half, and he's been cut six times. So Ocho Cinco was not brought here to be a great practice player. He has to step it up at some point. But I just think you don't give up on a $6 million player at this point in the season. The other alternative, who do you go to? And I know Taylor Price is one of those guys. But if Taylor Price had gotten to the point, and he had a great preseason, or at least a great preseason game or two,
yeah.
If he was at the point where he could come in and contribute 3 to 5 catches any given game, he would be on the field. Belichick isn't going to say, oh, you know what, you're behind the depth chart because this guy's a veteran and you're in your second year. If Price was ready to contribute and take those snaps, he would be out there.
The price is wrong, bitch.
Yeah, Andy Hart's a big Taylor Price guy.
He does like
Taylor
Price.
He thought this year was his coming out party, and he started off by, you know, we have the JetBlue Patriots pregame social here before every game, and every week it just seems like, you know, this is the week, and it just hasn't happened for him yet, unfortunately.
He had that hamstring injury.
What is he, Chad Jackson?
Oh, boy.
Oh, no,
he's better than Chad Jackson?
He is.
So they did better.
Well, statistically, not yet.
No.
But Taylor seems to be a pretty smart kid, and he's extremely athletic. The transition that he's had to the pro game has been a little tough because he came out of a very run-first offense in, I can think of the uniforms are green.
Ohio.
Miami.
Ohio.
Ohio. There we go.
Ohio University.
I knew it was out there. Jeez. A little brain flatulence there. So they had a very run-first offense. So everything that he's been doing in the NFL has been it's been night and day for him. So the transition's been tough. He's one of those guys that you would like to think would get it sooner or later. He's plenty athletic enough to be a good contributor. Who knows if it'll happen? But I think you got to use the same thing with Ocho Cinco. I mean, there are four guys who are on the field almost every single play who Brady trusts with his life, and it's tough to get those snaps. But conversely, you don't want those guys on the field for 60 snaps a game. You would like them to come out a little bit more, but they're still not a bad group of guys to have out there on a regular basis.
Yeah, he can't produce if he's not on the field, and he's only out there, I mean, I have here 33% of the time. So without him out there, he can't get the numbers that everybody's looking for.
And I think it's no coincidence we see guys like, you know, in this preseason it was him, Edelman in the past. Guys make plays. I mean, we all thought, people were saying that Julian Edelman was the next Wes Welker when he first came here, and he was running all around in the preseason. And the vanilla look on offense that the Patriots use, because they're not going to give anything away during the preseason.
Right.
You know, these guys can wrap their head around, these rookies and second-year players, they can wrap their head around what they're doing in the preseason. And, like you mentioned, they get a chance to be on the field on a regular basis, get into the flow of a game, and be comfortable.
Excellent point.
In the regular season, it just doesn't translate. So all these people that get so excited about these guys and what they do in preseason, and I'm not saying Stephen Ridley has been fine for what the Patriots have asked him, but you remember that, I think it was the first home game against Jacksonville or whatever, he had like three or four total touchdowns and cut a few screen passes and was running around like gangbusters, and everyone was ready to say, hey, we found the next Corey Dillon. I don't think so. Give it a little bit of time, son.
Yeah,
Ridley. Play against 12th stringers in the preseason, it's kind of easy to get those numbers too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. It's just people don't understand how complex that it is, how complex it is to run this system and to learn the system, and people don't understand like what Brady asks of these receivers, and it's just hard. Like, it's hard for anybody. I don't care how smart you are, what kind of pro style offense you come out of in college, you're probably not going to get it at first blush, and it's probably going to take you a year, like you said, your redshirt year, to pick it up. But what you hope is in that second or third year, when the lights go on, you know, the light bulb in the brain clicks, and unfortunately that hasn't happened yet.
And that, I think, is why Ocho hasn't been on the field that much, because obviously Brady's out there throwing to Branch and Welker. Those are two guys that he has more familiarity with than any receiver he's ever played with, and those are two guys that are out on the field at the same time. So it's not like he's on the bench because some average Joe receiver's out there and Ocho Cinco's not better than him.
Yeah, one more quick point that I want to make before we take a break is that I think it's also unfair to compare Ocho Cinco's first year with the Patriots to Moss's first year with the Patriots.
Not at all.
Because when Ocho Cinco came in, like we've been talking about, there were right away four guys above him on the depth chart when it comes to, you know, Tom Brady's favorite targets. When Moss came here in 2007, he joined an offense with first year with the Patriots, Wes Welker, Dante Stallworth, and then Jabbar Gaffney, who was, I believe, a holdover from 06.
The Jabbar Gaffney drop.
Hey, Jabbar Gaffney, just a guy who just dominated his role. He was a guy who could play for my football team any day of the week if I owned one.
He was the stud of that core of, like, Jabbar Gaffney, Rishay Caldwell, Doug Gabriel, just all those Jags that surrounded Brady in that year.
That what they did with those guys is pretty amazing. But anyway, that's Brady had no choice but to get guys like that involved in the offense immediately. And that's just, it's a completely different type of learning curve for Ocho Cinco, because they're not going to force it to a guy like him when he's got four better options. Let's take a quick break before wrapping up this hour of the show.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEAT or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
Dear business traveler who's flying away, you can get more out of your working day with plush leather seats including legroom galore to stretch out your knees, feet, and more. Plus 36 channels of DirecTV in your seat gives you something to watch once work is complete. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Edwin, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand at JetBlue.com/business. Based on the average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines, DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Droid. Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Horizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic.
It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never-been-owned-before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. And account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Now is your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
All right, we are back at it for the final 15 minutes of this show. This is not John Rook. He's actually in Pittsburgh right now.
You're right. It's not John Rook hosting the Patriots playbook.
I see what you did there, and I like it. I, once again, am Jeff Howe from Nesson.com, and I've got 15 minutes of this thing left, so let's party. We got a couple good emails here, one about Dan Copen and the other about Marcus Cannon. I think we can kind of combine both of them. First, Mike from Colorado. I love the fact that there's an email from Colorado.
Oh, we get phone calls. We're international, Jeff. We got a phone call from Thailand the other day.
Thailand.
Wow.
Bangkok.
Wow. Isn't that where Wedding Crashers 2 was?
The Hangover, you mean.
The Hangover.
I don't know if there's been
a Wedding Crashers 2.
I was going to say, there definitely was. Wedding Crashers 2.
Yeah, I mean, he's breaking news here on Patriots.com radio.
Yeah. All right, it's like
we've had soldiers from Afghanistan call the show.
Wow.
We have a guy in France that religiously calls. We have a guy in Puerto Rico. We used to have in here
pregame social.
Yeah, we used to have a huge map of planet Earth in here, and we would put pins in each country that we would get calls from.
That's awesome.
Since these new pads have gone up, that poor map has been retired.
Let's get Bangkok to call in tomorrow. All right, I'm back here from 2 to 4, and I want to hear from everybody across the world.
Let's get some Ludacris for you tomorrow.
I know exactly which song you're talking about. And I like it. I knocked off the hand grenade this summer, though. I got that off the bucket list.
Well, that's good.
So, anyway, let's get this show back on track before it slides completely off the rails.
It's starting to go PFW style right now.
Mike from Colorado Springs. Again, not surprisingly, not emailing about Daniel Graham or Nate Solder or Terrence Wheatley. The Patriots have tapped heavily into the Colorado resources recently. He wants to know about Dan Copen, and let's kind of getting through it. He's noting that Copen and Dan Connolly are both free agents after this season, and he wants both of them back, it looks like. And Scott says something about Marcus Cannon practicing for the first time. Wants to know if he's lost some weight. I honestly don't know that answer. But then about Marcus Cannon's prospects going forward. So let's hit on both of those right now. To start off, Dan Copen is a free agent after this season, mm-hmm. and so is Dan Connolly. Copen said today that he has not gotten to the point where he's thought about or he's working on his future after this season. Whether or not that's true is one thing, but he did say he would hopefully stay in New England. He did use the word hopeful or hopefully one of those two. It's all the same. Anyway, he wants to be back, and I think with the rapport that he has with Tom Brady, Brady is going to want Copen to get paid. Connolly has been a very serviceable backup. I mean,
so valuable, and at many different positions. That's the thing.
Right. Yeah. He took over for Logan Mankins,
yeah.
Stephen Neal, and now Dan Copen, all in about a calendar year.
And Brandon Tate last year.
Who'd have thunk?
Ayo.
So,
jack of all trades.
Clearly, he has been extremely valuable to this team. And to think that a guy could come in and fill in for all three of those interior spots shows the type of value. He's making over $1 million this year, too. So it's not like they're paying him like $410 and just absolutely maximizing the contract that they're giving him. He's come in. They've paid him to be the valuable member that he's been. It started off kind of rough. I mean, Brian Waters and Connolly rotated in that first game just 7 days after Waters signed his free agent contract with the Patriots. So it was like, all right, so how is this really going to work? A guy like Connolly who came in and played well, but then things, I don't want to say took care of themselves because losing Copen wasn't a great thing, but you haven't looked at Connolly and said, how the heck are they going to win games with him at center? He's played well once again.
Yeah, and I think that the fact that they brought Brian Waters in this offseason kind of tells you a lot about how they feel about Connolly's role in this offense. Mm-hmm. He's more of a rotational guy. Definitely, I definitely think that they should bring back Dan Copen. It's not ideal to have Connolly starting. He's great. Don't get me wrong. He's great. But I don't think it's ideal. I think he's more of a rotational guy, somebody that you can plug into spots when you need him, not so much have him start 16 games.
Yeah, I mean, I think of Copen, I mean, minus the injury, I kind of look at him, it's the same type of deal as Matt Light heading into this past season,
mm-hmm.
a long-term Patriot, a guy that's done well here. He's performed and been, you know, prior to this year, he's been pretty damn durable. I can't really off the top of my head think of him missing an extended period of time. I got to think that they would at least make an effort to try to bring him back next year. And Dan Connolly, I mean, what else can you say about the guy? He's Mr. Everything. I don't think the Patriots start any season thinking, hey, this guy's going to be my starting guard or my starting center, but they're definitely comfortable if that's what happens and that's what, due to injury, that's what evolves. So, I mean, it's hard to put a price tag on both those guys, but I got to think that there has to be at least an effort given what they've done consistently here for this team to at least bring them back.
And Connolly, if he wants to start somewhere, and
I think
he
could.
Absolutely.
I think that would be the most likely scenario, Jeff, of him leaving. I think it wouldn't be the Patriots not offering him compensation. It would be another team coming to him and saying, hey, we want to give you a starting spot and starting dollars. And if that's the case and we lose him, then, you know, Godspeed to you. He deserves that chance.
Yeah. They'll probably say you're worth somewhere between a starting interior lineman and a backup interior lineman, kind of mesh the two salaries together and figure out some type of number that he's worth. And if he wants to take, let's say, whatever more, if he wants to take more for an opportunity to start and further his career, then all the power to him.
And he may take, you know, he's probably going to take the same number, and who knows, he may even take less, because what football player doesn't want to be out there on every snap? If you don't want to be out there and play the game, then you should just hang him up right now.
Yeah. Copen is definitely going to be an interesting choice because
it's going to be tough.
He's an 03 draft pick.
Yep.
So he's getting up there in age, but he's done everything that they've always asked him to do. They love him. His knowledge of the game exceeds what a lot of guys can do in that position. And they need Brady, with all of his pre-snap checks, needs his offensive linemen to be on the same page. And he's been fortunate to play in front of a very consistent group of guys over the last decade here, or at least since 2005, really. And Copen has been at the center of that, literally.
Literally.
And so
monkey back
there. You go.
I'd be very surprised. I mean, with the way that Copen was talking and with the amount of respect that we know that they have for him, I'm sure that they'll be able to work something out. And now moving to Cannon, I don't think that he is going to contribute much this season. They can take advantage of this rule, and they can practice him for 3 weeks. And I think maybe in an ideal situation, they get back to full health, and they're not worried about wasting one of those 7 game day inactive spots. If it's like they were in Buffalo and then I think Oakland, where all 7 guys who were inactive were actually injured, then they don't have room to put another guy onto the roster and just kind of play with fire there. They're going to need that positional flexibility. I think maybe it's too much to ask, I would have to think. I mean, unless it would be kind of a miracle to go through everything that Marcus Cannon has gone through since March or April, and then to come back and get 3 weeks of practice, and only today was in pads. They might only practice a maximum of 2 more times in pads over the next 3 weeks, and then think that he's going to be healthy enough to contribute on a game day in an emergency situation. I mean, that would be phenomenal if he was able to work himself back into a game shape after all of this and just 3 weeks of practice. So, like I said, if they can afford that position or the game day inactive spots, and they can keep him around for an extra couple weeks before making using an emergency IR spot, I guess you would say, probably a better way to word that. But if their hand was forced, and they kind of like with Copen, they couldn't keep him on the active roster all season because they needed those spots. And if they can afford some type of luxury later in the season, which would be unlikely, then that'd be great. Otherwise, I think he's going to get these 3 weeks of practice. They're going to say, thanks for doing this. Here's your rehab plan. We'll see you next season.
Yeah, and I think that they did. I don't think they drafted him hoping that he would get a start this season. Yeah. I think that was the plan all along. So I don't think you're really losing much by having him not start. I do think that it's obviously great that he's back at practice and, you know, get out of him what you can and find out where he's at. But, you know, next season, I'm not sure if there are any free agent offensive linemen outside of the two, Copen and Connolly, but maybe he gets an opportunity elsewhere. So
yeah, and to piggyback on that point, Scott continues in his email, could you see him playing on the offensive line next year, and could you see him playing center if Connolly and Copen leave? It's an interesting question.
That right there is a very unanswered question. I think, well, Belichick spoke about it yesterday when he said that he was, obviously Cannon was a tackle at TCU, but I think a lot of people projected him as an interior lineman. That was mostly as a guard. I don't know if he could play center. I don't know if that's in his skill set. I mean, if you can play guard, usually you can play center. So that'd be an easy scenario for the Patriots. They sign Copen to a Matt Light type of deal. He plays for 1-2 more seasons, and then Cannon's ready to take over after that. But
yeah, I mean, maybe Connolly, like we said, leaves, and Cannon evolves into that Dan Connolly type role next year, where he could fill in at guard or spot duty at center.
He'd be like Quinn Ojinaku, who could play basically all 5 offensive line spots.
And that would be perfect for him. I think that one transition year of him kind of being a 6th wheel on the offensive line might be good for him, because there's no pressure on him, and it kind of allows him opportunity to get acclimated to the game without having the pressure of being all in for 16 games.
You look at the contract statuses, and Light has his 2-year deal, Solder has his rookie deal, Vollmer probably at least 1 or 2 more years after this.
Yeah,
so Brian Waters, who I'm going to look up his contract real quick right now, I think that is going to be a very interesting scenario with him, because
he's
been
well.
I think he's been their best offensive lineman from start to finish through 6 games this season. And that right there is pretty amazing. I mean, he showed up week 1 off the street. And this is a guy who is, I think, what, a 12-year veteran. And just, so it's not like he's got the young legs, but he's been an ultimate professional. I think I'd compare him to Algie Crumpler in that sense, and the way he's come into the locker room and been a leader and really helped them out from that standpoint.
He's 34 years old.
Yeah, I mean, but
he'll be 35 this offseason.
Unless there is some
for a lineman, that's an old man.
It absolutely is. But he's, when you look at the fact that he's been their most consistent, maybe best offensive lineman through six games, you know the guy can still play. Yeah. Unless there's some type of a debilitating or long-term injury that he suffers in the next 10 to 12 weeks.
You'd hope to see him back here in camp next year.
You would think so.
Given, or, you know, knock on wood, he doesn't go through something like Copen is going through now.
Yeah, and just, does Cannon come in? If they think that Cannon is ready to come in and start right away, they're probably going to go in Cannon's direction. But again, I don't see how you walk away from a guy like Brian Waters, who has done
Pro Bowler. Yeah, that's all you need to say. Yeah. Any guy that's been in the Pro Bowl consistently in this league and that still has enough left in the tank to get out there and play at a decent level and be healthy, he's going to have the leg up over the rookie, unless we're talking about, you know, a top 10 type pick, I think.
Yeah, I think absolutely that, you know, him coming in and being so useful right away, it's pretty incredible. And, you know, obviously you want to give a guy like that another chance next year. It's really all on Waters, though. I mean, he was probably contemplating retirement at that point, because it was a week before the regular season even started. So who knows where he'll be at next season, but I think definitely if he wants to be back, it's definitely a route that you have to go down.
Just looked it up. He's making $1.5 million this year, base salary. He actually is signed next year. He's making $1.4 million next year. Okay. He's actually making $100,000 less dollars.
Sounds like a pretty good deal so far.
Yeah, I know. You gotta like that. So they're in a good situation. Really, all they have on the offensive line is Copen and Connolly to work out. And with the depth that they have three tackles and the depth on the inside of the line, too, plus with Copen coming back, Cannon getting added into the mix, they're in a good spot in the offensive line both this year and next year.
Some of the practice squad guys we have too. I know Nick McDonald last year played a decent amount over in Green Bay, and you know, looking at Ryan Wendell, we have a ton of depth along the offensive line. So I don't know if they have, you know, going back to Cannon, I don't think they really have a pressing need to make him a center.
If the Copen thing for some reason doesn't work out, you're right. And I can't see a scenario where Copen and the Patriots part ways. This wouldn't be about money. This would be about two sides just realizing that they want to stay married to one another.
Look at this guy sniffing the jock straps of the practice squatters behind the glass here.
Just trying to help out the show.
All right, whatever. I see you carrying their helmets off the field after practice.
Hey. I would love to get on the practice field.
They're going to give you, you'll get the black jersey or whatever it is.
Practice player of the week.
It's too bad they're so deep on the offensive line. Maybe you'd get a crack
at
it.
He's a big boy. I know for those of you listening can't see him, but he's not that far removed from being an offensive lineman here.
Sign me up. I'll take the rookie minimum, and I'll be happy with that contract.
Not bad to get $350 right off the bat. We need there to be a media game, a media football game.
That's something that we don't have. It could be an ugly affair, but
it'd be awful.
It'd be interesting.
You know how many injuries there'd be? The press box would be empty on Sundays.
Lots of hammies, lots of Achilles.
Get Zolak out there flinging it around. Be all set.
Get the automatic quarterback right there, just like in the backyard,
be killing people.
Right. That'd be.
I saw him once. We were at the Winter Classic a couple years when it was here at Fenway, and I was playing catch with him in front of the 98.5 remote set up there, and he almost killed an old woman. he was a little
bit.
Have
some good stories.
He's a little bit off the mark, and I couldn't get out there to get it. And like he still throws lasers. You know, he's an old man, but he still throws lasers. And he probably came 6 inches from just decapitating this woman.
Oh boy, that's
made for a good news story.
Those type of skills don't just go away.
But it's been a good time, guys.
Absolutely.
Really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Hey, let's do this again tomorrow, huh?
Jeff and I will be back here tomorrow, and Eric will be here for the next couple hours.
I will.
Well, thanks for having me. I look forward to coming back tomorrow. And like I said earlier, let's get this thing international. I want these calls from all across the world. If we don't get Bangkok, I am going
to
be
Jeff
disappointed.
Jeff Howe wants to blow up internationally on Twitter.
Let's get big.
When I got home, it was 6 a.m. The door was locked, so I kicked it in. She was tripping on the bed.